This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of July 5th, 2022, brought to you by Taft. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. You might be aware that on June 24th, IBJ's Mickey Shuey broke a major story that has been brewing literally for years here in Indianapolis. He sussed out the planned location of the Indy 11 soccer team's future 20,000-seat stadium, which would be part of a billion-dollar real estate development that would include office space and retail and apartments and a hotel. Ersal Ozdemir, the majority owner of the pro soccer team, confirmed to IBJ that a subsidiary of his development firm, Keystone Corp, has acquired the 18-acre site at 402 Kentucky Avenue. And for your reference, that is south of Victory Field and a few blocks west of Lucas Oil Stadium. The site currently is the home of Diamond Chain, a manufacturer that has operated on the site for more than a century. The facility is expected to close, however, by early 2023. This massive project to be developed by Keystone Corp right now goes by the handle 11 Park. For the purposes of our conversation today, you should know that Keystone plans to have the stadium open in time for Indy 11's home opener in spring 2025. That is an aggressive timeline, not just for building the portions of the stadium you'll see from the street, but also for clearing portions of the site underground. Even in this day and age, you don't know what all you're going to find once you start digging. And we can point to a prominent example in recent years of discoveries that have delayed a major project downtown. Now, this much we know about the Diamond Chain site. In the 1880s, at least a significant portion of the site was used as a cemetery, the city's first major burial site. And graves have been discovered there as recently as 23 years ago. There also is a very good chance Keystone will need to remove environmental contaminants. IBJ's Mickey Shuey joins us for the podcast this week to give us a rundown on the history of the Diamond Chain site, what might lie underneath, and what is supposed to happen next in the development timeline. Here's our conversation. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the podcast IBJ reporter Mickey Shuey, who covers real estate, tourism, and the business of sports. Mickey, thanks for making time today.
Thanks for having me, Mason.
So here we have a story about 11 Park that hits on all of your beats. We have a 20,000-seat soccer stadium for the Indy 11. We have hundreds of millions of dollars in office, retail, apartment, and hotel development alongside the stadium that surely will be considered part of the Indianapolis downtown's sports and hospitality tourism assets. But today we are primarily concerned with the 18-acre site and what is underneath. So first, let's just help orient everybody. Where exactly is this site? I have to admit, I covered real estate for several years and I've lived downtown, and for some reason I had a total blank spot on this. Where is the Diamond Chain site?
Oh, absolutely. You're not alone, because you really miss the site a lot when you go past it, because it's kind of tucked away. It's just about a block to a block and a half south of Victory Field and about two blocks west of Lucas Oil Stadium. It's right off of Kentucky Avenue.
And if we were to walk over there right now, what would we see? What is the Diamond Chain site?
So right now you would see a pretty sizable manufacturing facility. It's about four or five stories tall, multiple components to it. That's on just a slab of concrete right now, and it's still being used. So you would possibly see people going in and out of that building each day, going to work.
How many people work there?
So right now about 240 people work there. Back in its heyday, up to 1,100 people actually worked at that site.
So what does Diamond Chain make? What do they manufacture there?
So Diamond Chain makes industrial roller chains, which are used in a variety of applications, including for construction purposes, agricultural purposes, as well as even food and beverage uses in manufacturing lines and transportation devices, things like that.
Oh, that's fascinating. So that really goes back to Indianapolis's automobile manufacturing heyday, which, you know, which used to be a huge part of downtown.
Absolutely. It it's one of really the last remnants of that in the downtown area. I mean, used to be the GM stamping plant site across the river, which we'll, I'm sure, talk about here soon. But they used to be really big players in the automobile industry. And before that, Diamond Chain was involved in the bicycle industry.
Well, sure. And we've talked before, just picking one out of a hat here, about the Stutz building redevelopment recently. The Stutz Auto Company had a factory over at around 11th and Illinois. And that property, too, is being redeveloped yet again. For something not entirely unsimilar to this project.
Exactly. And then you have other sites like the Ford Visteon plant that's on the east side. Now that's going to likely remain mostly industrial, but you're seeing a lot of reuses of these former auto manufacturing facilities now in Indianapolis.
Gotcha. So what is going to happen to the Diamond Chain operation on that site? Does it just go away?
So the Diamond Chain operation is going away because the company's owner, Timken, has decided that they want to consolidate its operations with another facility in Illinois. And that's going to happen likely before mid-2023.
Okay. And so the property then became available, essentially, because the current owner
exactly
doesn't need it anymore.
Exactly. The previous owner, Amstead, they actually had resisted selling the site for a long time, and then the facility was bought by Timken, and Timken, once they decided that they were going to consolidate the sites, they saw an opportunity for a real estate sale.
Okay. So we probably should note before we get too far into this that the plans for 11 Park are not etched in stone. This is not a done deal. What still needs to happen in order for Keystone and Keystone's principal owner, who also the principal owner of the Indy 11, Ursula Ozdemir, to break ground and get to work?
In a word, lots. Lots needs to happen in order to make this deal work. Not the least of which is they need to get rid of that building that's there now, but they also need to come to an agreement with the city and the state on exactly what type of incentives and other financing mechanisms will be made available to actually fund this project. The stadium portion of this project.
Where Keystone is going to handle the other portions of the project, but there's going to be really significant participation from the state and the city on the stadium.
Correct. And that's just stemming from 2019 legislation that paved the way for the stadium to come together as part of a public-private partnership.
And there will be architectural plans and all kinds of perhaps zoning questions that need to be answered.
Exactly. And all that is really yet to be determined because the developer Keystone or Saul Ozdemir's company, they have yet to even finalize exactly what all these components will look like on the surface level, let alone architecturally and behind the scenes.
So then what is really interesting about this is that they already have established something of a timeline for putting this all together, and it's pretty tight. Can you run through that real quick?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty aggressive timeline in that they hope to tear down the Diamond Chain facility by spring of 2023. Within a two-year time frame, by spring of 2025, when the team kicks off its home opener, in the USL Championship Division, they hope to have the stadium done. They want that first game there. And 2 years for any project these days is tight, but for a stadium especially, it's a lot of experts have said that that's a pretty bold approach.
And so, of course, the problem with these kinds of projects that require, I'm assuming, serious excavation of that site is that is the stuff you just can't control, the stuff you don't even know about yet, the unknown unknowns. So there's a great example from several years ago that we discussed just yesterday. When the city of Indianapolis was building the Julia Carson Transit Center at Delaware and East Washington Street, you know, maybe less than a mile away, as crews were excavating the site, they found archaeological remains. They found foundations of previous buildings from the 1880s, as well as glassware and flatware and other artifacts from the period, and the need to recover and assess the historical value of that stuff delayed the project by 7 months and cost an extra $6.5 million. So do we know anything about what could be underground here?
So it's important to note that we don't know what we don't know at this point. What we do know is that this site was at one time the city's first cemetery, first burial ground, back in the 1800s. And while a lot of the bodies, well, all the bodies are believed to have been moved from the site since then, there have been instances of more remains being uncovered through diamond chains expansions. In 1999, there was a situation where two buried remains were uncovered as part of a floor removal process to bring in new equipment. So there's a chance that there's more remains under this site that they just don't know about. Now, it is important to note that Keystone has told me that they have done some preliminary research on the site and some preliminary digging of certain parts of the parcel, and they have not uncovered any evidence of remains. But until you actually dig up the whole site, you don't know.
Okay, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
Taft, today's modern law firm. With more than 625 attorneys across 11 offices, we provide solutions to the business issues facing middle market and emerging companies alike. We do this through a highly collaborative and inclusive team approach. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast and my conversation with Mickey Shuey about the proposed home of 11 Park. What happens if they find more graves?
So essentially, they will have to stop work on the project until those remains can be properly relocated to another site, likely another cemetery here in Indianapolis. That's part of city code, and that's something that Keystone has said that they are committed to doing properly if that were to arise.
I'm just trying to imagine being somebody who's digging at that site and hitting, you know, a pine box. I mean, who knows how? I mean, what the condition of those?
Well, and in 1848, it wasn't just pine boxes that they found. They found an iron casket that had perfectly preserved the occupant, who actually was a casket maker in the 1800s, and he died and was buried in an iron casket, and they uncovered that, and it was a big deal back in the 1940s.
In the 1940s? Wow, yeah. That's amazing. This guy was a casket maker, and he said, I know the way I want to go, and I'm going to go there in style, and somebody's going to find me.
The funniest thing about that is that, according to research from D.D. Davis, who's at the IUPUI Heron Art Library, he had run an ad just a week before in the Indianapolis newspaper advertising his caskets, and then he passed away.
Yeah, so let me make sure I've got the history right. So in the early 1900s, most of the remains were moved to Cranhill Cemetery and Holy Cross Cemetery. Not all of them made it out before the site was sold for redevelopment in 1914. And what was it in 1914?
In 1914, it was repurposed as a baseball field for the Federal League Indianapolis Hoosiers. They were here for about a year. They actually won their league championship, and then they moved to, I believe it was Trenton, New Jersey. And then they were eventually disbanded about a year later after that. So it was a baseball field at one point.
Wow, that's some bad mojo that I'm sure that they had to deal with.
Yeah.
And then 3 years later, and is that when Diamond Chain, or whatever the predecessor of Diamond Chain was, comes into the picture?
So yes, in 1917, the Indianapolis Chain and Stamping Company ended up taking on that site and building the first part of its new facility, which it would add to multiple times over the years. And that eventually transformed into Diamond Chain Company.
Now, the other major concern must be finding some kind of environmental contaminant that would need to be removed from the site. I mean, that is something that is much more common, I think, to find, especially when you're dealing with an industrial site that's redeveloped.
Absolutely. And experts say that it's not going to be hard to find some environmental issues on this site, just given that it's been a manufacturing facility for the past 105 years. And the developers are aware of that, but they're confident that it's not going to shake their timeline at all. They think they're going to be able to remediate all the grounds of the site just fine without having to delay the project.
And I'm just spitballing here. Like, they would find different kinds of oils, perhaps.
Different kinds of
metals.
Chemicals. Oils, groundwater contamination from those substances. Some metal could have seeped through, but it's likely to be more oils and chemicals than anything else, it sounds like.
Is there a recent example of a downtown construction project that ran into something like that?
In fact, the GM stamping plant site just across the White River had to deal with very similar issues, and that was a much larger site, a much larger facility. It took about a year to a year and a half to actually fully remediate that site, in part because of just kind of jurisdiction issues and making sure that the Racer Trust, which is in charge of revitalizing GM sites, kind of had the authority to do all that. But yes, I mean, that's just right across the White River, and it, very similar circumstances to what we're seeing now with the Diamond Chain site.
Yeah, and it was 100 acres or so,
yes,
as I recall. So, I mean, bigger than 18 acres, mm-hmm, but still, you know, you probably can't do like a corresponding ratio with how much time it takes to get rid of stuff like that.
Right.
It could take months.
It could take months, but it's really on a case-by-case basis with these sorts of issues. And they'll be able to do really extensive environmental studies here in the coming months, I'm sure, where they'll be able to determine exactly how deep any remediation will need to go, and that will determine the length of time that it will take to actually remediate the site.
I mean, this seems like something, I mean, when we talk about big development projects where the owners have done a lot of due diligence ahead of time before they buy the property. Did Ersol or Keystone, anyone involved in the purchase, really get a good look at this before they bought it?
The way they explained it to me when I spoke with them about this, they didn't have a lot of time for due diligence on this site. So they kind of just had to wing it and buy it on a whim. But in the months that have followed, they've really been looking more into the history of the site, trying to determine what they should expect to find there, and started that environmental process.
And again, they believe that they have enough time built into the schedule to deal with whatever they possibly could find.
They do. They're very firm in that belief that they will not encounter issues that will delay them from getting the project done on time.
Is there anything about the Diamond Chain operations now that's considered historically significant or worth saving? You know, we'll go back to one of our favorite examples of the mall, Circle Center Mall downtown, where the facades of some of the buildings were considered to be contributing, you know, to the historical fabric of Indianapolis, and they actually had to basically shave off the facades and present them as part of the mall.
So in the research that I've conducted on this and that Ms. Davis did at IUPUI as well, there's been no indication that Diamond Chain, either in its entirety or in sections, is considered historically significant either in Indianapolis or in the United States. Now, there have been rumblings that the Division of Historic Preservation and Archaeology in the state's Department of Natural Resources might have a different view on that, and there might be some sort of unknown historical designation for part of the site, but there's nothing that I've uncovered that would indicate such.
So is this really the work that is going on right now, or is there some other big milestone coming up for the redevelopment of the site? What is the next thing that we need to be on the lookout for?
So the next thing that we need to be on the lookout for is actual design plans for this project. And along with that, a deal with the city. Those are going to be the biggest stepping stones that are coming up. Because once that deal with the city is figured out, at that point, it should be pretty easy to get the project through zoning approvals and other necessary hoops. But until an agreement with the city is reached and we actually know what this project will truly entail, it's hard to say exactly whether they are on the money with their timeline and on the money with their financing.
Got it. Well, I know you'll be on top of it, so let's revisit this in a few months and see what happens.
Absolutely.
Hey, thanks so much for all your time and your great reporting on this story.
Thanks for having me, Mason.
My thanks again to Mickey Shuey. If you want to read more about the history of the Diamond Chain site and the future plans for 11 Park, you can find Mickey's coverage at ibj.com. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few other stories in the latest print edition of IBJ I want to draw to your attention. The major stock indexes tumbled into bear territory in the first half of 2022, but many Indiana-based public companies have performed surprisingly well during the market downturn. Susan Orr has more on how the Indiana Index and solid performers like Eli Lilly and Company are holding the line. Also in this week's issue, John Russell pulls the curtain back on pharmacy benefit managers, which operate as middlemen between pharmacies, drug makers, and health insurance plans. And Daniel Bradley details the plans behind the $59 million expansion of the Boone County Jail, which officials say will help lead to an increased focus on rehabilitation and less on warehousing inmates. And again, you can find these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at ibj.com. I will say that it's easier to access all of the latest local news about business and politics and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business, community, and economy if you're a subscriber. And here's a new development. We have wrapped all of IBJ's content together with all the stories, columns, and podcasts from our sister publication, Inside Indiana Business. And that works out to about $3 per week for actionable information about every notable business development across the state. You won't find Indiana's story told with this kind of breadth and depth anywhere else. Just go to ibj.com and click on the subscribe button. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.